I'm Sandra, and I'm just the professional your small business was looking for. But you didn't hire me because you didn't use LinkedIn Jobs. LinkedIn has professionals you can't find anywhere else, including those who aren't actively looking for a new job, but might be open to the perfect role, like me.
In a given month, over 70% of LinkedIn users don't visit other leading job sites. So if you're not looking on LinkedIn, you'll miss out on great candidates, like Sandra. Start hiring professionals like a professional. Post your free job on linkedin.com/achieve today.
Welcome back to the Lantern Rouge Cycling Podcast for our first proper day in the Alps. Not a high mountain stage, but a hard stage from Annemasse to Morzine. Stage 14 of the tour, the first Saturday stage, and we've got another very hard stage tomorrow. This stage, four medium mountain climbs out the gate. 4.5Ks, 5%. 7Ks, 7.5%. 6Ks, 7.5% descent, and then another 6.5K, 4% climb before a valley, and then the Col de la Ramaz, irregular 14Ks at 7%. The first 7.5 were harder before, again, another step descent, 10K valley, and the Joux Plain, where Lance Armstrong, I think, bonked back in the day. Landis took 7 minutes on this stay on this climb. It was the hardest stage when he did it. Pantano's spin over the top. It's a fearsome climb, 11.5 kilometers at 8.5%, but that belies the difficulty. All the pros say it's one of the hardest climbs in the Alps, even though it doesn't go up to very high altitude, only to 1,700 meters until a little plateau and then a descent into Morzine, which is quite technical. They repaved it, though, but lots of double switchbacks, etc., you know, a succession of them back and forth. So big day, Benji, for the GC battle in theory, and we'd expect big gaps this stage, but brake formation, well, it was kind of marred by a crash because there was light rain, the first rain that's been there for a while, and I didn't see what really happened exactly, but a lot of riders went down in brake formation before even the first little category 3-ish climb.
Yeah, seemingly like a bend dad go slightly sideways to the right. That's where it happened. Maybe rider slid out somewhere, most likely causing everybody else to slide out behind. And it was such a major crash that the race was neutralized as a consequence for a total of 30 minutes, because on one occasion, if the road is blocked with a major crash, then the race thinks about, oh, if something else happens later on, then we can't get an ambulance to the front of the race anymore. So the race is unsafe. So that's part of the reason. Another reason is also there's no breakaway yet. Nothing has formed. So you might as well neutralize it, because let's be honest, a lot of riders were on the floor and quite a few riders are out of the race as a consequence of this. But Till looked bad, but I think he was still riding after the crash, but I'm not sure if he actually finished the race. But riders that are definitely out are the likes of Antonio Pedrero, climbed very strong at Swiss. We saw him a few times this race as well. Louis Mankies, who was fighting for the top 10, a real shame that he's leaving the race. Sinkeldam is out. No clue if it's related to the crash, but I just wanted to mention that. Guerrero, same thing. And Chavez is also out according to this crash. But it's not the last crash, because the race kicked off again, breakaway formation, and another crash happens in a descent. Bardet into the corner, on the floor, Shaw as well, and both riders are out of the race. So, yeah, that sucks, huh?
It was bad, and Bardet, I didn't see that one either. It was a very fast descent. There were actually splits on that descent.
Yeah.
So, I don't know who was pushing it, the brake formation. Obviously, Alaphilippe was ahead. He was solo pushing it because everyone's trying to get in the brake before the next sort of category one climb. And yeah, Bardet, he looked bad and moving his legs. Eventually he stood up, but he was very wobbly. So the right thing, obviously, abandoning the race. Did you say Petit abandoned? Or because Petit
rode,
he had,
but I'm not sure he abandoned.
Gash in his glute.
Yeah.
And he got dropped earlier. He looked bad. So I worry for him. Yeah, I worry for him basically. So yeah. Anyway, brake forms.
He did,
in the time limit.
Seemingly, he finished. I don't know if it's true yet. This page says it. But anyway,
he'd be still on course, I think. Yeah, I don't think the Gruppetta would have made it in by the time we're recording this live. Breakaway forms, very, very strong. It's the type of break you would expect with Kwiatkowski, yesterday's winner, Martinez, who I think had a concussion check because he was in the crash. He was in there. Vandenberg, Palace for KOM points, Alaphilippe, Lando with Moric. So Lando finally gets in. Hollett, Ciccone with a teammate, Pedersen, he wants KOM points. Gurgel, Geschke, Aaron Baru with a teammate, Izagirre with Jorgensen, Nalens with a teammate, Kraddick, Lutsenko, Varenskold. So it's a really strong break. We've got multiple good climbers with multiple teammates. And Jumbo just start pacing, Benji. like 25 seconds behind the breakaway with Christophe Laporte, just a heavy pace. We actually didn't really see them start pacing, but we just saw, I knew someone was pacing because Pino and Ciccone and Juanpe were riding a 7K, 7.5% climb hard, really hard, and the gap was staying at 20 seconds. So I was like, if someone's not pacing, that gap would explode.
Yeah, Laporte was pacing for Jumbo-Visma and their entire train was at the front end. We didn't see them be active at all in the breakaway formation phase. So no Wout van Aert jumping 25 times to be in the breakaway. No Benoit trying that. No Kelderman trying that like 3 days ago. Obviously, Wout van Aert would have been the designated satellite rider if they had a plan like that on the table. But seemingly their plan was to just make the race hard from the front of the peloton, regardless of there being a breakaway ahead, there being a gruppetto behind, just tunnel vision on themselves. We're going to ride every single climb with X amount of riders. Laporte on the first two climbs, then Van Hooydonk took over a bit later, and we saw that action kind of truly hinder the breakaway to the point that I swear the max gap that the breakaway had was about a minute 30 when Woods and Ciccone went there was
max,
on a sprint adventure for KOM points, but it always went down towards roughly 30 seconds, 20 seconds in between climbs, and it was a really strong performance by Laporte. And a few times this Tour de France, we've mentioned him that he seemingly climbs a lot stronger because he's been surviving some really difficult break formation phases.
Yeah, but 10 and 12.
What do you reckon is the theory behind doing the train formation strategy versus trying to get Wout up the road to get him to be there on your plan anyway?
Well, I mean, when you look at this descent, it's very technical. It's not like the descent of Ramaz, which is very high speed, and you can lose a lot of time if you're gapped. We'll get to that later. The descent of Juplan is a technical descent, many corners, braking. Of course, a teammate might help, but the marginal benefit of it, I don't really. Maybe on the plateau, a teammate could really help you. But again, I think it's not like a stage where there's a long valley at the end or a long valley in the middle where there's an attack point before. The last climb is the hardest one. The descent is technical. And also we saw on the Tourmalet, Van Aert, when he's trying to get in the breakaway and jumping and Jumbo are jumping, it makes break formation take a lot longer. And then if they want to get into this phase of making the race difficult, they can't really start that. And that was a problem on Tourmalet when Bora basically kept the gap to Van Aert really close. And so Tourmalet, the first half was paced by Van Hooydonk at not a very serious pace if you're a GC contender. Obviously, he was going hard, but Poggi, fresh, you know?
Yeah.
And so, yeah, it's just, there's no real benefit, I don't think, to a satellite rider today, except if you get dropped on the Ramaz. But if Jonas is getting dropped on the Ramaz, he's the tour is over. So, I mean,
I agree. And like you said, I think the main value of doing this strategy is the fact that a Laporte, a Benoit, they haven't struggled in the breakaway formation phase and can now do the work at this point in Nathan van Hooydonk. And they're doing that greatly because they keep pacing, basically, and they keep catching riders from that original breakaway. Like, we can talk about the breakaway, like a Kwiatkowski was out there again, a Martinez, a Paulus, a Mohoric, a Pedersen. But most importantly, Alex Aramburu was in the breakaway and he was climbing with people like Michael Woods and so forth, Ciccone. So can we just take a second to talk about the fact that Aramburu is able to be with those riders in this stage, but he can't be competitive at any point in his life in a Grand Tour stage? What's wrong with him?
It's very curious. He was riding super hard, man. I was like, well, it's impressive. But then it's like, you're right. Like, where's he been? On stage 10 or 12?
Yeah.
Where he could win. And tomorrow, I'm sure the break will win tomorrow. I bet you he won't be there. So. Yeah, I'm sorry for you. But you said you're out on him. Who's your guy at the moment? We haven't really... Like, who is your guy, apart from Poggi?
I feel like I've lost my guy. I don't really have my guy anymore.
Yeah,
so,
like that plucky underdog to root for, you know?
Yeah, I'm like a lone vessel on the ocean trying to look for a rider to grasp on. And in the Giro, that was Almeida because he's funny, because he always drops and then hangs on 50 meters behind. But I don't have that here, so... I don't know. In Velta, it's going to be a Yuzo. So I'm already in that camp. Nobody can stop me.
Plucky
I'm in
a Yuzo
camp.
On a 7-year, 7-year contract. Plucky underdog. Why not Yuzo? Yeah. Nah, I like Yuzo too. Anyway, we'll get to the Vuelta in 3 months, 2 months, whenever it is. Jumbo are pacing. They're pacing. The door is doing a really hard pace, mainly because, you can tell it from, you know, your real cycling aficionados can tell Wasp Aquilo from the eye. You can just tell from the TV. And if you see an Italian and a French KOM battle on a climb at 7% and they're not gaining any time on the Peloton's going really hard. I'll tell you that for free. So Ciccone, Pinot, Woods. Pinot and Woods attacked with 1.5 Ks left on the second of the category ones, Col de Fou. And this is where it was curious, Benji.
Yeah.
Jumbo have explicitly stated their intentions here. Yeah. They are going to pace this stage. Break has no chance. No chance. As soon as it forms, it already has no chance. We have two category ones. Nice points, by the way. And these are, quote unquote, these are easy category ones. 6K, 7.5%. Yep. That's an easy cat one for KOM points. You then got no points until the Ramaz and a long valley. We have a break stage tomorrow. I thought, if I'm the DS of Ciccone, Woods, the other Pinot, the other guys in the group, I would have told them, pull the plug at the top of the second cat one and save it for tomorrow.
I thought so as well. And at a certain point, we see Woods going back to the peloton when they're the last, like, three riders up the road. But Ciccone just sets off again. And he's like, he's like, I'm not stopping. I don't do boring. My name is Giulio Ciccone, and I want to send my glasses into the audience at some point in this stage. And then he gets caught
Jumbo
20 seconds later. That's what he said until they caught him. But anyway.
Because he could win tomorrow. He'd be my favorite from the break tomorrow.
Yeah. I do want to mention Jumbo Visma. We said it, Laporte was pacing initially. It looked like Van Hooydonk was taking over in the valleys to kind of make sure Laporte had a bit of rest in the valleys to then later in the race fully take over at the foot of Ramaz. So we're with 63 kilometers to go. Everybody's caught. The peloton's at the foot of Ramaz. Nathan Van Hooydonk takes over, but it's also not long because he's already worked a bit with Laporte beforehand. And the foot of Ramaz is also pretty steep. So Nathan Van Hooydonk is a decent climber, but he can't get over Ramaz. Benoit takes over 4 kilometers in, and Van Baarle moves up into second position. So Van Baarle had been sitting at the back for quite a bit. What is the reason that Van Baarle sits at the back of the train for that long?
I don't know, actually. Well,
I don't mean either.
He struggled with holding the wheel on descent, so maybe that's a problem. They don't want him, because remember on the stage, Castro was pacing 2 days ago, and the Ineos train went clear with Jonas, and then Van Baarle was gapped, actually, when Izaguirre won. So maybe they don't want Van Baarle in front of Vingegaard because he could drop the wheel. That's my only guess. Or maybe he just likes it there. It's good to have the guys front and back behind you. But yeah, it really is just a choo-choo situation. Did you see anything? You know what's curious to me? Gaudu was basically, he was swinging in break formation. Mm-hmm. And then he made the last 10 guys. So I don't know what's going on with FDJ and Gaudu. It's like he's not warming up properly for the stage because he was fine today, like fine enough. Yeah. But how he's dropping from a break of a group of 150 and then he's there at the end. So I don't know what. And he kind of did that on Grenon last year. He dropped really early and then came back and finished well on that stage. I think top five. Anyway, the Ramaz, it's irregular. It's nasty. There's a tunnel that's really, really steep. Van Hooydonk pacing. Benoit takes over. Van chew through their domestiques now, and it's eventually who takes Van Baarle? Does he drop Pidcock, Benji, or Benoit initially?
Well, I feel like Pidcock was already moving backwards when Benoit was there, but when Van Baarle actually takes the front, that's when Pidcock started to really suffer. But I swear that he held on to the back of the group for quite a while, as in he was at the back of the group for probably 5 to 10 minutes fighting together with Mud was dropped earlier, but there were some other riders that were also dropping at the same time and kept coming back. I think it was Guillaume Martin, if I recall correctly, that was doing the same yo-yo situation at the back of the group. And that kept going for a bit. But from that point onwards, we also see Soler dropping at that time. We're now roughly how many kilometers from the top of Ramaz? I would say roughly 5 kilometers from the top of Ramaz. Wout van Aert is taking over, but Van Baarle stays in the wheel of Van Aert. And I was thinking, what's the reasoning here? Because a bit later, we see Van Baarle once again in the first position to give his full and then drop. So I'm asking you for a second. Why is Van Aert taking the front position from Van Baarle on Ramaz to then have Van Baarle come to the front again and drop? Because my first thought when Wout van Aert came to the front with Van Baarle switching to second wheel was, are they going to try and get Van Baarle over the top? But then they switched back and Van Baarle dropped anyway.
I think it's because it's irregular, because you can't see it so well on TV, but there is a big difference between 5 and 11%, obviously, or 9%. So I think Van Baarle did his last bit on the flatter section, and then having internet connectivity issues today. I got the Ethernet cable plugged in like Luke makes me do. I used to work off just wireless. So yeah, bear with us. But I don't know. I thought Kelderman, when Wout was pulling, looked suspect. Mm-hmm. And he had crashed earlier in the stage, but he looked like he was struggling on that Ramaz climb. UA looked actually fine. At the start of the stage, they looked thin, like right at the start, and then they actually had nice numbers. Groschartner had come back, Yates was there, Micah was there, Soler was dropped. But what do you think it is with Pidcock, Benji? Let's talk about him for a second. I have my what I believe happened, but he was so good on Grand Colombier. He was so good on Puy de Dôme. How is he dropping from the pace of Teish Benoit today?
Well, those are Uniperto stages is the first thing I noticed. One climb at the end of a stage, so no consecutive climbs, making it harder for him to follow. That being said, there was quite a bit of climbing before Puy de Dôme, just not in a full mountain situation. But I think the real consecutive big climbs are what hurt him, I feel like. No?
I think so. And you look at the kilojoules before. I mean, Ramaz still is a little bit early, I think. But yeah, it's very, very different to Grand Colombier, where you sit in the draft all day. It's like a Jebel Hafid a little bit sort of stage. Obviously, it's a little bit harder before. But yeah, I think, and we've seen this in Amstel and Liège, Benji, sort of when the gas tank runs out. And then, you know, Healy's dropping him. Of course, these are one-day races compared to stage races. But he looks really, really good up to this point, and that's why I liked Rodriguez for this stage, because he's like Enric Mas in Spain. We have
Rodriguez. Yes,
he's Enric Mas in Spain, but in France, he's more of a diesel. And I think these stages really, really suit him compared to the, you know, punch at the end of Puy de Dôme. He got gapped, in fact, and he was looking really, really good. Hindley there. No one apart from Pidcock was dropped from the top 10 except on Ramaz.
Pinot was dropped 11th, but no one except for Pidcock. Yeah. Yeah, but no one except for Pidcock. There were 17 riders at the top, and only Pidcock from the top 10 was gone. But there were people showing some weakness at the back of the group and in that group, except GC Cus, because GC Cus is on, man, because in that descent, I was thinking maybe Tom Pidcock can come back to the front, but no. Wout van Aert kept going in the descent. Splits start happening, but most importantly, 2 minutes 15 to Pidcock, meaning GC Cus moves into 9th in GC, so it's happening, and
that's why Jumbo rode hard all day.
For GC Cus.
For sure, dude. That's why else would Wout van Aert keep pushing the descent with Pidcock dropped? But okay, so we get to that descent. We have the descent now. It's not that technical off Ramaz. It's irregular, though, in parts. There are some really 70 kph pedaling parts, and that number is really important, because if you're 80 kilos, Wout van Aert, versus 58 sort of kilos, Pidcock's a brilliant descender, super aerodynamic. He is one of the best in the world, but on a straight road that's not that steep, you want to be Wout van Aert, who is, you know, pushing 600 watts easily or 700 watts on the descent, and is heavier and so going down quicker. And there were splits, Benji. In fact, splits in the group at the top with Felix Gall, Simon Yates, and Chris Harper off the back of that split. And they had to work really... By the way, shout out Chris Harper. I have to do it because he's Australian. He was, in that group of 17, the lowest paid rider. I don't know his salary. I don't know his salary, but I'm guessing. The lowest paid rider, most likely, by a long way.
Steph Cross would have been there and would have been the lowest paid rider.
Steph Cross on more than Chris Harper, I'll tell you that.
What?
Steph Cross will be on more than Chris Harper. He went to Total
really?
Energy. You think he's on there for minimum?
Belgian think he's GC on prospect. More than Chris Harper?
No.
Chris Probably Harper similar.
Chris Harper, anyway, he was flying. He did a really good job. He helped Yates come back with Felix Gall, but that's not what you want. The last thing you want before doing a 35-minute full gas effort up the Jouplan is to have to chase on the flat whilst Kelderman and Jumbo Visma and Van Aert are rotating turns. UAE are looking good, though. UAE look calm. Micah's going back to the car. They got Micah, Groschartner. Soler doesn't come back. They're looking good. Pogacar looks pretty fresh. And Kelderman starts pacing the flat, Benji. Yeah. And so that was clear then. he did not feel good on the Ramaz.
It was a combination for me, because when Kelderman went to the front, that was my initial thought. But then a kilometer later, Wout van Aert took over again. So I was kind of confused for like a period of 5 minutes. But it all became clear to me. Obviously, the group of Yates and so forth, because of Kelderman pacing at the front, comes back. But the second we hit the bottom of Jouplan, Kelderman is pacing ahead of Wout van Aert on the climb. And that's a deciding factor, obviously. If Kelderman starts pacing at the bottom of the climb, then Wout van Aert is going to pace after him. But I think UAE did something there that I found really interesting. I found it a really interesting move, because Kelderman and Wout van Aert are pacing. Well, Kelderman in front of Wout van Aert. And Micah kind of looks at Pogacar, looks back to the front, and moves up in front of Kelderman and Wout van Aert with that typical Micah move, as in upping the tempo a bit, which completely blows up Kelderman and Wout van Aert, because they're parquet-jouing initially for the next 20 seconds. And Micah keeps it pushing, then lowers the tempo. And we're thinking, Wout van Aert is gone. Kelderman is gone. But hell no. Call the ambulance. But not for me, Wout van Aert. Comes back from the dead. He goes to the front of the group. He drops Micah. And then he needs to properly call the ambulance.
Well, Pog shouted at Micah. Jaws. Yeah. When Wout started pulling again, Pog shouted at Micah saying, pull harder. And I was like, bro, I'm out.
That was super impressive by Wout van Aert.
The fact that
He was almost standing still.
Yeah, but before. No, he was. That's what UAE do. They do it every climb. And with McNulty, it was more pronounced too. They do first 2 minutes with Micah really hard. And they drop the Jumbo Domestiques.
Yeah.
The theory is the Jumbo Domestiques give up, stop pushing. And then Micah and UAE, with now a numerical advantage, by the way, Yates, yeah. Pogacar, Micah versus just Kuss and Jonas, they control the climb. They do what they want on the climb. But yeah, Van Aert coming back disrupted that.
Clever move by UAE, though.
They always do it. Yeah. And Grenon, they did it too. So it doesn't mean, in the past, it has meant Poggy. It just doesn't necessarily mean he feels great.
Yeah.
Sometimes it does mean he feels great. So maybe he did feel great at the base of Grenon. But anyway, Kuss takes over after Van Aert finishes his pull. The group is very thinned out. It's the select riders, and we have Kuss, Vingegaard, Pogacar, Adam Yates, Carlos Rodriguez, Hindley, Simon Yates
Felix
has dropped. Felix Gall. I shouldn't know Felix Gall erasure. He is Kuss 2.0, this guy. He's got to fix his descending, but he is a serious climber.
Yeah.
Serious climber. I don't know what Asia Tour extended him on, but hats off to them for getting that done, because teams would have been coming for this guy after this performance today. And Swiss was outstanding too. So a select group, Benji. The losers would have been Simon Yates and Pidcock are really losing a lot of time here.
Yeah, to GC Kuss. Because GC Kuss is moving up left and right. Now virtually on eighth in GC. So the gradual moves up are happening. But like you said, Sepkus at the front, not a deadly tempo, eh? But to the point where after 2 kilometers of Kuss pacing, because he started with 8 kilometers to go on Jouplan. So still a lot of kilometers left.
Yeah.
After 2-3 kilometers of him pacing, we did see people cracking in that group. We saw the likes of Hindley getting into trouble, the likes of Gull just before Hindley getting into trouble. But the fact that Gull got so far is really impressive. Hindley dropping before Carlos Rodriguez means that Carlos Rodriguez, Mr. Godriguez, is pretty hyped for the podium. He's still far behind, but every gap that he can take back means that he's competitive for it. So I was really intrigued in seeing that battle as well, but Hindley dropping beforehand, oola.
And to that point, Benji, if you can tack on to the train of the first and second battle with, you know, Kuss is going to just drag this.
Yeah.
That's where you can take so much time, because if you're sort of back with them and you're attacking each other, this is where you can take that huge time. And yeah, Rodriguez is just so impressive. I think he probably is a little bit better than Christian Rodriguez and Arkea, but I'm not ready to see that one yet to Benji. Might need to chalk that one up to the Benji victory column, I think. Unbelievable performance from him. And it's what whoever signed him for next year will have been hoping to see at the end of his NeoPro contract, up there with the big boys on the Jouplan in the Tour de France second week. That's what you want to see from a proper GC prospect. And he's also got some other great skills. So anyway, this is what's curious, Benji. And this was what I was not expecting. Kuss drops Gull and Hindley. I think you might have already said that.
Yeah.
4Ks to go. Pogacar was, I thought he started to rock a little bit, but his face looked really good. His face looked like on Colteray. He looked, yeah. His, and Puy de Dome, he looked really fresh in the face. He puts Yates to the front to start pace. First of all, Adam Yates is back. This is a much better performance than the other stages.
Yep.
And second of all, okay, Micah at the bottom, you can say is a tactical thing. You can't read into that too much. When he told Yates, get to the front and fucking pull, you know he feels good. Otherwise, yep. you sit on the Koos pace.
Exactly. And otherwise, you try and keep Adam Yates to be your defensive rider with you in case you drop from the pace of Vingegaard if Vingegaard decides to attack. But it was clear that he was up to something. And when Adam Yates starts pacing, I'm just waiting for the attack. And the question that was going to happen was, has Jumbo-Visma pace in this race, in today's stage, hindered Pogacar from using his acceleration to instantly gap Vingegaard and stay away until the finish line? That's the question we're looking at, yeah. Or is Vingegaard able to follow? Or does he stay on a gap? Or what's going to happen? That is what we're looking for. And it's with about 3 kilometers to go that Yates' move at the front, Yates' pacing at the front ends, and Pogacar does his move. Pogacar accelerates, and Vingegaard initially is in the wheel, right?
Yeah, yeah.
But 3 seconds later, he's kind of not.
And I was counting. I was like, I just basically, when will Pog sit down? If yeah. Pog cannot sit down for 30 seconds, he will gap him.
Yeah.
And I'm not sure he did get to 30, but he also didn't just sit down after 10 either. And so he gaps Vingegaard. But now, the difference between Colteray, which is, and Puy de Dome was 4 minutes to the top. Colteray was, I don't know, 5 minutes, 6 minutes. We're still pretty far from the finish, Benji. And we've seen Pogacar attack Vingegaard before on a long climb this year, actually, and Vingegaard's come back. The Cuyol in Paris-Nice. Of course, they're both in completely different shape to that climb. But we still have 10 minutes left on this climb. And so Vingegaard, well, yeah, first you have to see how does the gap expand? Because we've seen on the other climbs, Vingegaard holds it a little bit stable. The Puy de Dome was pretty stable.
Yeah.
Or on Colteray, he was fucked. And he was bleeding time, lost 24 seconds. And this was the former. Vingegaard's holding it stable. And at that point, I was like, Vingegaard's not losing time today. Even if Poggi holds 5 seconds over the top, Vingegaard will close it in the descent. That's why I always saw this descent as actually a bit of a parachute or a net for Jonas.
Yeah.
Because I think Jonas can close 10 seconds on him on the descent. And he just slowly claws his way back, Benji. I don't know if... I think Poggi stalled a little bit. Or do you think Poggi looked back and he saw him, you're still there 5 seconds behind. If Poggi, why would you let the gap close? He's off your wheel.
Both are on the way to cooking, as in to getting cooked. Like both are on the way of getting cooked, and Pogacar was getting cooked faster ahead than Vingegaard behind. And Vingegaard got close, where he's taken on 5 seconds for like more than a kilometer, I'm pretty sure.
Yeah,
kilometer and a
time.
Half even. It was a long time until the last 1.5-ish 1 kilometer. And Vingegaard does get back to the wheel. And at that point, I'm like, okay, Pogacar didn't choose to have Vingegaard back in his wheel. I don't believe that at all.
No.
He had to pause his attack because Vingegaard caught up. And now he knows he needs to recover. But Vingegaard should also know that Pogacar needs to recover. And this is a point that I think we will disagree with. As in, Vingegaard's definitely also cooked. Pogacar is also cooked.
Yeah, he got dropped.
But this is a fight between two deaf swans at this point. And at that point, I think we might have seen more weakness in Pogacar if Vingegaard decided to try to keep some pace. Because
I'm going to take a step further and go full PCM mode. Oh, sorry, you finished your point.
Yeah, because I feel like every second that Vingegaard sits up and surpluses on the climb, stays at a slow tempo next to Pogacar, is a moment that Pogacar fully recovers
for sure
to have another accelerative kick at the end of the climb.
I agree with you. And this is full PlayStation mode. Don't get me wrong. Ridiculous to say it, but...
You should have attacked him.
No. When you have him back at 2 seconds...
Yeah.
And you'll take your recovery at 2 seconds. Don't do your recovery with Pogacar.
Yeah,
so once Vingegaard,
keep going.
Once Vingegaard had him there, I mean, it's It's maybe Vingegaard was completely cooked and wanted to recover himself. You don't know how he felt in that moment, but I agree. If there was a moment to attack Pogacar, it was now 30 minutes into a climb, now deep into the calories. Now Pogacar's already done a big anaerobic effort and he's stalled. That would be the moment to attack.
Yep.
I don't think there is no way you can say to Vingegaard, start riding the same tempo you were chasing at in front of Pogacar, with Pogacar in the wheel. Because if you get countered like that, you're an idiot. So I think the only way is you try to go straight over the top of him if you've already tried to recover a little bit behind him. But also he could have been cooked himself, man. Like,
well, they were definitely both cooked, eh? So we're talking about the 0.1% that one rider might have had over the other. But at that point, I also start thinking about Cold La Laws and so forth when I see this type of stuff. And I can't wait to have the discussion.
That was almost a victory for Jonas.
Being able to come back is a major progress compared to getting dropped in previous stages from that attack. But that's also thanks to an entire day of work of Jumbo Visma. Because otherwise, if Jumbo did not work the entire stage so far, Pogacar is off, fresh attack, and Vingegaard doesn't see him again.
Yeah, well, Pogacar takes his 15 seconds on the burst. And then they both ride the climb at the same speed.
Yeah.
And yeah, you're right. Vingegaard never comes back. But he comes back. They surplus a lot. So Vingegaard goes to the front. He keeps pacing. And this is really important. Sorry, indigestion. I had so much sparkling water today. I've been really stressed. Rodriguez starts to come back. He was in Narnia. And he starts to come back on these guys. He's got Hindley dropped. He's obviously chugging away. And Yates is also coming back. And they're not far behind either. But they're not going to catch them by the top of the Juplan where the 8.52 bonus seconds are. And so what was curious to me was, Benji, I thought 500 to go, Vingegaard's got to go to Pogacar's wheel. Because I was like, why isn't he in Pogacar's wheel? Because you know Pogacar's going to try to hit you with another 30-second burst. That's his specialty. He gapped you with it five times this tour. Pogacar hits him with it, and the motorbikes are in front of him. And we'd seen this coming, Benji. The whole of the climb, the motorbikes had been too close to the riders. Also, the barriers, there were no barriers. How can you have a mountain sprint for bonies with no barriers? And the fans were everywhere on the road. And so maybe they were and they hopped over them, but I didn't see enough of them. So Pogacar basically has to full on brake. Vingegaard rolls up to him. Vingegaard retakes the lead. I can't remember.
I think he stayed in the wheel of Pogacar, actually. Initially, they rode next to each other for a bit, but stayed in the wheel.
Yeah.
But let's first talk about the motorbike incident for a second. Yes. He's attacking like this with 700 meters to go towards
500,
the...
less even.
Yeah, 500, 700 to 500, whatever. He's attacking there. Pogacar is spending some of his bickies there to try and win the sprint, to try and win the three bonus seconds that are on top. And I am of the full opinion that if the motorbikes are not there, that Pogacar takes the 3 seconds here.
I don't know, actually.
I've got 90% certain.
Based on all previous history, that would be correct. So,
well,
but Pogacar's response to Jonas' attack was a bit flat-footed. Now, whether that was inattentiveness or whether he'd already spent his bickies, as you said, but yeah, Jonas takes the 8.52,
but
a 6-second delta.
Regardless of what happens with the motorbikes, obviously the motorbikes happened. Eh? To be clear, the motorbikes happened and Pogacar got fucked by the motorbikes. 100%. The next step is that Vingegaard does that counter move late in like 1:50 to go, which at that point, Pogacar should have been more aware that Vingegaard was going to make
or
a move.
Or jumping again.
Because it took him 2 seconds to respond. And
that's
I think he didn't have it. I think he lost it on the response time and not on not having it.
I don't know. He's got a pretty good sprint. So I thought, I don't know. Anyway.
I think the motorbikes threw him off.
This was so bizarre, right? This climb, Jumbo pace all day for the long climb of endurance Jonas to drop Pog. Jonas gets dropped, but Jonas takes the bonies that Pogacar always take. It was completely the wrong way around, this climb. This is why the tour has been so brilliant this year. It's impossible to predict anything.
Yeah, but...
And then...
How does the Rave solve this issue? As in, we know
barriers.
That, yeah, putting barriers is a solution, eh? Because we know that sometimes police motorbikes ride in front of riders to make sure the audience, the spectators, don't run in front of the riders. So they have to somewhat ride closely to the riders. With barriers, you don't have to do that. add an bonus second sprint, there should 100% be barriers to avoid needing those motorbikes for the spectators. I'm pretty sure they were actually motorbikes with TV cameras, not police motorbikes. So I'm not sure there, but there was also Guardia Civil, French ones. I don't know what it's called. Gendarmerie on the climb in that last section instead of barriers, but they clearly weren't doing their job very well if that happens. So it's race organization failed here for me.
I agree. And, you know, poor old RCS would be thinking, why don't we get any flack? Why do we get the flack for everything? We try to hold a transition stage that's a bit long and people, you know. And
I'll go as far as saying, if I am UAE after this race, I'm going to the UCI commissaire and I'm trying to get something done. I'm trying to get these bonus seconds discarded.
Annulled, yeah. Should, yeah. I mean,
they won't do it, but
they won't do it, but yeah, they should. Anyway. Pogacar, though, he tries to counter Jonas through the bony sprint to gap him before the plateau. So we have a plateau here, the only place where a satellite would be useful. I was surprised by this because Yates was close. Yep. I was like, why would you ride to keep Yates behind you? And so, but anyway, he tried to gap Jonas back in his wheel. Eventually, they do stop before the descent. And just before the little kick up to the descent, Rodriguez, the motos also completely blocked Rodriguez and Yates coming back for a long time, and they were swerving, and Rodriguez didn't know which way to pass. Rodriguez attacks the group into the descent. Vingegaard makes his biggest mistake of the stage here. He had to enter this descent ahead of Pogacar. Now, whether that's on Rodriguez's wheel or whether that's ahead of Pogacar, he needed to enter this descent ahead of Pogacar.
Yep.
Pogacar doesn't. He initially does respond to Rodriguez, gets to his wheel. Yates is fourth in the line, so we got Rodriguez, Pogacar, Jonas Yates, and Rodriguez gaps Poggi.
Yeah, and he's just a better descender. We saw it in that Strada Bianca. That Strada Bianca where Pidcock went in that descent and rode off with everybody. Was it? No, Pogacar went in that descent and rode off from everybody. Rodriguez was the only one in that descent to also gap the others, if I recall correctly. So he's a truly good descender. I also believe that Vingegaard is a better descender than Pogacar, and I believe that Pogacar's descending is decent. But
It's good enough, yeah.
There's a margin to those riders to the point that I believe if Vingegaard was in front of Pogacar, he could have put Pogacar under pressure. But
or he would have held Rodriguez's wheel, I'm sure of that.
Okay. I don't know, but okay.
But that doesn't mean Pogacar would lose Jonas' wheel either. I'm just saying Jonas would have kept his wheel.
What do you reckon when it comes to Adam Yates now? Because we're getting into this situation where Rodriguez is up the road a few seconds, max 10 seconds, maybe seconds. Yeah, five, whatever. To the second group, which is Vingegaard and Pogacar, led by Pogacar.
Yates dropped.
Vingegaard, 1 second? No, 1 millimeter on the wheel of Pogacar. He was literally on his back wheel. So close that it got scary in some corners because he's faster in the corners because he takes better lines than Pogacar.
Yeah.
And then behind us, Adam Yates. But Adam Yates is interesting because if you're Pogacar, one, he wanted to win the stage because he kept on pacing
in that descent,
even though he got gagged. But on the other end, wouldn't you want Adam Yates to try and steal second? Because otherwise you only gain 2 bonus seconds.
I mean, Pogacar was simultaneously doing many things. I think he was trying to block Vingegaard from going in front of him on the descent. He did a very good job of that because you close off the hairpin, Jonas can't pass you, and then Pogacar's got the way bigger kick out of the hairpin. So Jonas can never pass him out of the hairpin unless, you know, like McNulty on the descent before Périgueux last year. And he's also chasing Carlos Rodriguez for the stage win. But to your point, Benji, when Yates comes back, we now have about, what, a K of flat? We've got 2 minutes left to the stage. And this is also, you know, they're fucked. They're all fucked. They're all, you know, they're just under the scent, right? You got to know the bony's difference. And so Pogacar coming third and Yates second is much, much better for Poggi on both. Because Poggi is beating Jonas in the sprint, whether he leads him out, whether Yates leads him out, he's beating Jonas for this flat sprint.
To be clear, to make it clear, the winner gets 10 seconds on the fourth rider. The second rider gets 6 seconds on the fourth rider. And the third rider gets 4 seconds. So the difference between getting second and third is only 2 seconds, which is one of the dumbest rules in cycling.
Yeah.
I believe that should be either 10-6-3 or 10-5-2.
10-5-2, yeah.
So regardless of that, it's 10-6-4. So Pogacar getting second and Vingegaard third is only 2 seconds. So
yeah.
I would have enjoyed UAE trying to either you have Yates attack, or you don't spend him in the lead out so he can try and sprint to take away the third place from Vingegaard.
I think that's never happening. I really don't see Yates after... I don't see him from this tour with even the same burst as Jonas. But still, that's an option. And Poggy can lose his wheel in the lead out too, as well. But I think you got to have Yates go. And Poggy loses his wheel through that corner he came back in, and then you take the full four-second delta. Anyway, Carlos Rodriguez, magnificent performance. Back-to-back stage wins for Ineos Grenadiers. This one they wouldn't have been expecting, but absolute masterclass from the Spanish Andalusian... Andalusians, they're not... You know, they're happily... I think they're happily part of Spain.
Are they?
I think so, yeah. 22-year-old. Don't know where he's going next year. Rumored to be Movistar, but wins the stage today, dropping Jai Hindley, his podium competitor, on the climb. And Adam Yates came back with him, but dropping a lot of other people. And then a masterclass descent to hold off Pogacar, who was, you know, not exactly going slow or had a guy pulling for him in the last case. So just an unbelievable performance from Rodriguez. Perfect timing. Yeah. Can't wait to see what happens from him in the future.
And shockingly, he actually goes past Hindley in GC. Hindley loses that much time. That is insane to me.
Whoa. So yeah. Anyway, Pogacar second, Vingegaard on the same time third, 5 seconds behind. So only a 2 second bonus delta there in Pogacar's favor. Adam Yates fourth on 10 seconds. GC Kuss on 57 seconds. Then a gap of 50 to Hindley, who actually comes back to Felix Gall. And it's curious, Gall got dropped on the descent but came back to him. Very impressive. I thought he was gone and going to lose time to Hindley, but he finishes same time as Hindley. Bilbao and Yates lose 3:19 and 3:21. 10th on this stage, finishes on 6 minutes. 6 minutes! And this didn't go to high altitude. This had two climbs, neither of which were over 45 minutes, and the 10th place finishes on 6 minutes. Guillaume Martin on the same time as Goudou. Pidcock loses 8:40. So kind of like Grenon last year, Benji, if I look at Col de Grenon, just quickly on stage 11, 10th finished on 4:37. Vlasov was on 4:40. So there's bigger gaps today from 1 to 10 than in Grenon stage. And also Pidcock there lost 9:55. So I think it's the kilojoules if I had to guess. But listen, not the... It didn't turn into a Grenon stage, but I thought this was very entertaining nonetheless.
Of course it was super entertaining. And the one question we now have is, who's going to win the Tour de France? Because every single race we had so far has been seconds between the two riders, except for in the first week. We've had the last three mountain stages before this, Pogacar dropping Jonas Vingegaard with a tiny bit of a gap, and Vingegaard being able to somewhat sustain that towards the finish line, while this time around, they were together over the line, and Vingegaard basically takes a bonus seconds, which, let's be honest about it, it could have either gone all three to Pogacar as well, based on the motorbikes. So let's just say that they finished together after this race, which means that, honestly, on one end, people will say this was shit from Jumbo-Visma from pacing all day to have this kind of result, not gaining time on Pogacar. But I think the only reason he's not losing time to Pogacar is because they paced all day. And if they do this again on Col de la Loz, I'm getting more and more confidence in Vingegaard on Col de la Loz as a consequence of this stage.
Yes, but A, what's the result of the time trial the day before Col de la Loz?
B, Pogacar has an edge for me.
I agree. B, Pogacar is so fucking good right now. He is. Yeah. This is the best I've ever seen him.
Yeah.
His performance today in a high mountain stage, back-to-back long climbs. This is not back-to-back 20-minute climbs. Long climbs, super hard all day. It wasn't cool conditions either. It wasn't rainy Carpegna or cold Carpegna. Hot conditions, okay, admittedly not too high altitude. It didn't go over 1,700 meters. This is, and to attack Vingegaard, this is the best I've ever seen him. Maybe 2020, yeah. I could look at the numbers and he might be better there in theory, but I think this is the best ever version of him as a pure like mountain climber stage race rider. So yeah, super impressive. And yeah, he's obviously the favorite for the tour right now because he's 10 seconds behind. There's plenty of bonies left, and the TT, you have to give him the edge. And right now, there's no guarantee Vingegaard drops him on lows. And also, if he does drop him on lows, Roglic dropped him on Col de la Loz. Yep. It was only 15 seconds.
Exactly.
And so if he, there's no guarantee he full cracks either.
That's the beauty of the sport, huh? Unpredictability. We don't know who's going to win the Tour de France at the end. It's very close between these riders. I just feel like Jumbo has that tiny bit of a better feeling than they did when Vingegaard was dropping the last few days after today. Because at least he didn't drop this time around, which is a step forward.
He got gapped.
Yeah, he got gapped, but he came back. And Col de la Loz is a long climb, so I can't wait to see the same situation unfold on Col de la Loz. Pogacar dropping Vingegaard with an acceleration. Vingegaard, I do feel like he switched to riding his own tempo after Pogacar's attack a bit quicker than he did previously. So maybe he said to himself, I'm not going to let that attack deplete me fully. I'm going to ride my own tempo and see if I can crawl back to Pogacar that way. I think this tour is going to get really close, and I goddamn hope that these 3 seconds don't end up deciding the Tour de
France. They're so close in level. It's insane. They're so close in ability.
It's amazing.
Anyway, GC. Vingegaard extends his lead by a solitary second on Pogacar to 10 seconds. Rodriguez moves into third on 4:43, big gaps. Hindley drops to fourth on 4:44. Adam Yates maintains his fifth on 5:20. Sepp Kuss jumps four spots to 8:15. Beautiful stuff. Simon Yates drops to seventh. He lost 3 minutes today to 8:32. Bilbao lost a lot of time as well with Yates. He drops from seventh to eighth on 8:51. Felix Gall jumps up five spots. Lavenu and what's your man? Julien Jourdi, vindication for pacing the other day. Vindication. They knew what they were doing.
This doesn't change the fact that they got nothing out of pacing that day.
GC Gall didn't keep the guys behind.
But GC Kuss is more real, and he's far away from the top five, let's be honest about it. 5:20 to 8:15. But
he's going to cook on Col de la Loz, I tell you
Col de la Loz, he's going to get past. Is Hindley the most fragile one in the top five then? Sorry for saying fragile, that sounds weird.
Precarious. He's in a precarious spot. It really depends on, you know, he's got two domestiques behind him. Yates and Kuss' priority is not to move advanced GC positions. I think Yates a little bit more pressure on him to maintain it. I know that, but their overall priority is to make Pogacar or Vingegaard win the Tour de France. So that is Hindley's advantage, but I think Rodriguez should beat him in the TT, but Hindley did a good Dauphiné TT, but Rodriguez TT is quite good. And then Lowe's, if today's anything to go by, will be a very good... What did Rodriguez put into him today? 1:46, so that could be exacerbated on Lowe's. Anything else from this stage, Benji? Because obviously, I'm biased, of course, but I agree with you that, you know, Jumbo pace all day, they get 1 second, and you get gapped initially. What are you doing? You'd look stupid. We have seen if Pogacar is fresh on Puy de Dôme, you can't hold his wheel, man.
I agree, and I dislike the criticizing of both Jumbo-Visma today and UAE yesterday. I criticized their breakaway formation strategy.
Yeah, that was bad.
Because they suck at breakaway
formation. But once it's gone, you gotta chase.
Exactly. So the chasing for the seconds is not an issue because this Tour de France has been decided in the last week by seconds. It's all about seconds at the moment. It's all about seconds until at one moment someone loses more than a second. And then people will look at the strategy of that day and say, oh, that was a master plan. But they've been doing it every single day so far with seconds as rewards. It's just the fact that at some point it might be more than seconds and then the Tour de France will be decided. It could also be that the time trial decides the Tour de France, which is also so significant because we said before this tour, all limited amount of TT kilometers. They're so close in GC when it comes to their key capabilities, not that relevant. But at this point, it could just as well decide the race and
Jonas being hyper-aggressive on Couture. Would he have lost 24 seconds if he defended from the base of that climb?
Yeah, but it was a logical decision that day to do that based on the day before. So it's all hindsight. This Tour de France is a matter of gaining seconds until someone cracks and loses minutes. That's it.
I agree. And, you know, both of them haven't been beset by bad luck yet. We've had a pretty, until today, I was thinking about it. Unfortunately, the crash and neutralization reminded me. It'd been a pretty clean Tour de France from crashes. I hadn't really, there'd been no mass pile-ups in the sprint stages or anything, no GC guy even having a mechanical with 5Ks to go in a sprint stage and losing a minute or something. So, you know, it'd been a pretty good Tour de France from that perspective. Obviously today, you know, Martinez crashed hard, Menke's out, is a shame for him. So anyway, tomorrow's stage, Benji. Légette les portes, les portes du soleil to Saint-Gervais-Mont-Blanc. This is, I don't know, is this medium mountain or a mountain stage? I can't really tell. It's 180 kilometers. The first part of it is starts uphill out of neutral, brake should form there. Then there's a 30K, 20K valley where I think the brake will get a nice gap. A 9K, 5% climb where you could have some tuggers doing some work like a Juanpe, and then a step descent. Again, nothing categorized yet before they do the Col de la Forclaz, which is 7.2K, 7.5%. Very irregular, by the way, like the last 3 kilometers average 10%. It's quite a steep, again, irregular descent, irregular climb, and then the Col de la Croix-Frey, I can't even say it properly. Did they use this in the Dauphiné? 11.5K, 7%. Again, irregular, steeper Ks in there. There's a 4%, there's a 9%. Short descent, Col des Arrivées, 4.4K, 6.2%. So there's two Cat 1s there. Brake got to be going for them. Then a Cat 3. And then from 134 to 180, which is 46 Ks, that's maths for you, there's a descent, a false flat uphill, another descent, and then two climbs to Saint-Gervais-Mont-Blanc. Côte des Amarants, which is 2.7 Ks, 10.1%, with very steep at the start, and then a very like 1K of flat, basically, and then another 7.7 Ks to Le Bétex. It's called Le Bétex, 7.5 Ks, 7%. There's a lot of climbing here, Benji. I think over 4,000 meters elevation, but no climbs. Extended climbing apart from Croix-Frey, if I can't say that. That one's too tough for me. There's over 30 minutes. So it's the hardest medium mountain stage I've ever seen.
It's very intriguing because like the Col de la Croix-Frey, just wanted to correct you there for a second to feel superior for 1 second. We've got a plateau section afterwards. So you'd say, oh, rider in the breakaway, satellite rider for that valley, stuff like that. But the riders are so close to each other, Vingegaard and Pogacar, that there's no way someone's going to make a move on Aravi or Quaffi in my head because they're like so close to each other. That's how my head feels like because Pogacar ain't dropping from a Vingegaard on those two climbs. And the other way around, it's also relatively unlikely. Unless, like, honestly, if I'm UAE, would you risk going all out and and trying to drop Vingegaard on Quaffi
to a
satellite rider? Yeah, it's
you like, said it. 4 seconds, Pogacar, man.
Pogacar is destined to take time on this stage, but is there a situation, scenario where I believe he's destined to take seconds if the breakaway, well, even if the breakaway wins, he can still take seconds in the 700 meter sprint that
he has. Harder control than Grand Colombier, and they fucked that up.
Yeah, but even if he doesn't get the stage win, he took seconds on the road anyway in the sprint on Grand Colombier. So that way he's destined to either finish ahead of Vingegaard or take seconds. But
exactly.
Is there a scenario when you look at this parkour where they don't have a Wout van Aert in their team, so they can't pull this off, but just hypothetically for a
Soler,
second.
Disrespect to the man.
Where Pogacar attacks on Quaffi or Aravi, makes that gap to Vingegaard in the same way that he did so far, and he wins the tour like that on a stage like this. It's super risky, but I like risky.
I mean, he's going to have Kuss still there. He's going to have probably Wout still there.
Yeah.
Unless you full launch it with Yates and Micah and stuff. I mean, you could.
You put Wout in satellite rider just in case as a defensive measure, or do you think that's not even necessary?
There's no way Pogacar, in theory, drops Jonas on. No, with a first base, 11.5K, 7%. I mean, who knows how they respond after the stage today, which was super hard. I think this is a breakaway. I really do. And this reminds me of the final stage of the Dauphiné, which Ciccone won, also with irregular climbs and very difficult. But just the fact that it starts uphill, where good climbers will get in the break, where there's also then 25 minutes of valley at least before the first climb. And, you know, Bjerg, he's not there, man. He's not going to be there to pace after that little uphill kick where everyone goes apeshit. So I think it's going to be very difficult to control the breakaway. I think you got to be good to be in it, and it's going to be Ciccone, Pino, Woods, all those guys. We saw Paulus, but he's not good enough uphill against those guys. So I think Ciccone wins, and I think Pogacar takes 4 seconds on the road. They don't get near the break, but takes 4 seconds on the road at the end of Betex with a burst.
I think so as well. I think Pogacar can take seconds on the finish line with a burst, even if the break doesn't win. So it depends on how much his burst is on that line. And that's going to be this stage. Pogacar once again gaining seconds. And then we look at the stage after the rest day. It's a time trial. And the day after is Courchevel called La Loz finish. So not tomorrow's stage, but the two stages after will be the deciders for the Tour de France. And I think we're going to know who wins the Tour de France by the end of stage 17, because I don't believe in stage 20 making the difference.
Oh, I do. I think that's a... Dude, if Vingegaard's 10 seconds or 15 seconds ahead of Pogacar on stage 20, that's a nightmare.
Well, that's true, but I do feel like the gap is going to be bigger by
and
then.
And UAE don't have the satellite riders or the capability. But yeah, I think stage 20 is pretty nasty. But I agree, Lowe's is a different beast. We should have a pretty good handle on it after Lowe's. Tomorrow, you can definitely lose the Tour de France if you have a major problem, especially after the stage today. In terms of, what about Ineos, Benji? Do they twist the knife in today, tomorrow and go for Rodriguez? Does Pidcock have to train? Does Pidcock go on the breakaway and try and win the stage? Oh, Pidcock could win this stage from the break.
How far is he in GC now?
Because
that matters, eh?
He lost 9 minutes today.
Okay, he's in the shadow realm of GC. He should go in the breakaway. And I think Pidcock could indeed win the stage that way. Yeah. It's not nonsensical.
Because he got fucked on Alpe d'Huez, on Grenon.
Yeah.
And the next day he won Alpe d'Huez.
Yeah. Exactly. Woods also looked good in the breakaway today,
yeah,
so he's
going to
try
good.
Again. Ciccone is going to try again. He also looked good in the breakaway today. So all the riders that failed to get anything out of today, they will try again that tomorrow.
Can I retract my pick?
Oh God,
I think Ciccone is going to flick himself going for KOM points. Same with Woods. I think they're gonna, that's Ciccone's focus. I'm taking Pidcock. And Gull, can Gull get in the break still?
Probably.
I think the long climbs are better for him. I think he should just stay where he is and then cook on Col de la Loz. Yeah.
Exactly. I'd love to see him on Col de la Loz and see where he can get there. But it's just clear that the 2 days that are going to decide are not the one tomorrow. And how I see those two stages is what we said earlier. Because I said that I've got Pogacar with the edge on time trial and Vingegaard with perhaps the edge on Col de la Loz. What do you have?
I don't know. No, Pogacar in the TT for sure. Yeah. I agree with the TT. Lowe's, I'm not so convinced, actually.
Okay.
But because, Pog has improved a lot. And even from stage 5 to stage 6 and 9, he improved a lot. So I don't know. He could
it's
going to
be
wobble.
A good tour.
Like in 2021, if I remember to when they first had their battle and Jonas was five minutes behind, there were some principles from there where, like, Poggy cooked Jonas in every uphill sprint. He took four seconds on the road on Ardiden, on Porte, but he had one big wobble on two. Maybe his big wobble this year was Marie Blanc and he won't have another big wobble. You can't expect him to, but I don't know. Today he was very, very good. He did stall, I think, but Jonas didn't take advantage of it. In fact, he was gapped. So maybe Jonas is just thankful he didn't lose any time today. But the tour is so finely poised. What did we learn today? Nothing.
Wow.
Everything.
I disagree. I feel like we learned something. I feel like we learned that there are chances that Vingegaard doesn't drop after an attack of Pogacar. As in, doesn't drop permanently after an attack of Pogacar.
Yeah.
Detail.
Maybe. Anyway, hope you enjoyed the podcast. Very, very interesting Tour de France. Benji, who's your pick for tomorrow? Did you pick anyone?
Pidcock?
Okay, we both
Throws
got Pidcock.
You.
No, I'm
so
taking him too. There's
I'm
no
forcing
rule.
You to... Nah, okay. There is a rule now because you stole Almeida
I
from me in the Giro preview,
picks.
So I now steal Pidcock.
Where's Gull? 12:56. Free Landa. Mikel Landa wins the stage, baby. Woo-hoo!
Pidcock destroys him.
Nasty Jumbo-Visma. Nasty Jumbo-Visma chasing Landa. The one time he gets in a breakaway, they chase him. Despicable team from them. I'm not happy. But yeah, maybe Kuss in the break, Benji. Who knows? All right. Landa wins. See you with the recap of stage 15 tomorrow before the well-deserved rest day for us on Monday. The riders should keep going. Until then, ciao.
Why don't more infant formula companies use organic, grass-fed whole milk instead of skim? Why don't more infant formula companies use the latest breast milk science? Why don't more infant formula companies run their own clinical trials? Why don't more infant formula companies use more of the proteins found in breast milk? Why don't more infant formula companies have their own factories instead of outsourcing their manufacturing? We wondered the same thing. So we made ByHeart, a better formula for formula. Learn more at ByHeart.com.